Well, as we move forward in our last message on Moses, most important character in the Old Testament, I suppose that David, of course, is the next most important, but Moses takes most important because Jesus talks about Moses more than he talks about David. So that makes Moses the most important anyway, but he also has five books of the Bible that are attributed to him from Genesis through Deuteronomy as the primary author and collector of that information from creation until the time that the people are at the gates of the promised land. And he is an unusual character, of course, and I'm talking about God building his people with unusual characters. And Moses is almost an example of what an unusual character is for God. Because here's somebody who was born in a home where he had a death sentence on his life because he was born a Hebrew boy among the slave camps in Goshen. And his mother and his sister put him in a basket of reeds and floated him on the Nile. And he was found by the princess of Pharaoh and taken as her own child. But the amazing thing there is his own mother was called on to nurse him because Miriam showed up and says, "I know somebody who can help you with that." And so after Moses was weaned, then he was brought back to the princess of Pharaoh. Well, of course, he grew up then in that place, and the Bible has none of the growing up part, just that he was there. And we find him then as an adult. He lies as an adult. He's discovering his identity is not quite Egyptian. His identity has roots with the Hebrews. He sees an Egyptian abusing a Hebrew slave. He kills that evil slave driver in anger. But it didn't win any points with the people. He was still Egyptian in the eyes of the Hebrews. And now they were worried about him, whether he was going to be another taskmaster over them. So he took off. He left there. He went off to Midian, and he formed a new life there. He married. He had two sons. God called him through the burning bush, and he ended up coming back and meeting Aaron along the way because God had sent Aaron to meet him. His older brother Aaron came. He met. And they went in order to tell Pharaoh to let God's people go. Now, here he was. He was an adopted child of the daughter of Pharaoh. He ended up a murderer. He ended up on the run. He ended up then a shepherd. Now he ended up hearing from God in a unique way of being sent back to speak to Pharaoh to set the people free. Well, it's unusual already in that, and we've talked about some ways there's been ups and downs as he's dealt with the people over these past several messages that we have here. But today we want to focus on the kind of the end of the story for Moses. I'm not actually going to speak of his death, but just how things ended up where they did. You can see it, you just can't go in, would be one way that we would speak of the situation before Pharaoh. Okay, so Moses, an unusual character, is now ready to take the people from where they are into Canaan. And as they're gathered together, they've left Sinai. They've moved on toward the wilderness area of Kadesh. There's an oasis there. And Kadesh Barnea actually means a place of holiness. And that is where they were. And they're getting ready to go to Canaan. And so Moses inquired of the Lord about what to do about this. And God said, send 12 men as scouts. Numbers 13. We're in the book of Numbers, midsection 13 and 14, and then chapter 20, and the first chapter of Deuteronomy today. So the Lord spoke to Moses, send men to scout out the land of Canaan I'm giving to the Israelites. Send one man who's a leader among them from each of their ancestral tribes. So that makes send 12 men as scouts to go. And so they went in and they surveyed the land from one end to the other, the promised land that they were given. And they looked at the cities, they looked at the fields, they looked at the hillsides, they looked at the farming areas, all of that. And then when we come down toward the end of Numbers chapter 13, we read the report of the scouts that comes in 13:26 to 28. And it says that the men went back to Aaron, Moses, and the entire Israelite community in the wilderness of Paran at Kadesh. They brought back a report for them and the whole community, and they showed them the fruit of the land. They reported to Moses, we went into the land where you sent us. Oh, indeed, it is flowing with milk and honey, and here's some of its fruit. However, the people living in the land are strong. Their cities are large and fortified. We also saw the descendants of Anak there. Giants is what they meant when they said that. And so here is the struggle. Moses has led them out of Egypt because God's mighty hand had been upon them, had been upon Pharaoh, had caused them to suffer all of these plagues, who had caused even the death of the firstborn. So they'd driven out of Egypt, and they went then to the Red Sea, and God had opened the Red Sea and sent them through that and destroyed Pharaoh's pursuing army in the sea. And they celebrated that as they reached the other side, and they moved on towards Sinai, and they saw the smoke and fire on the mountain of God as the glory of God came down upon it. Of course, before there was the pillar of smoke by day and the pillar of fire by night that led and protected them. But now the mountain was just ablaze with the glory of God, and Moses went into that and he brought back the law. Now, of course, there were a lot of stories along the way there that we talked some about. And now they've done that. It's been almost 2 years since they arrived at Sinai when they send the scouts on into the land of Canaan. It took a while to get all the laws, all the rules, all the training that was necessary. Now, this training was necessary because they needed to be a people that knew what it was like to follow God through his prophets rather than to be driven under slave control. And I want to thank my brother Simeon for helping to point this out to me last week. As they came out of Egypt, they had been 400 years there, and more than half of that time had been as complete slaves. And they had a slave mentality. They were used to slave owners and slave drivers and control of that. They had a slave mentality when they went, and they had to learn what it was like to follow God through his prophet. This was a whole different realm for them. And the training period here had gone on at Sinai for nearly 2 years before now it was time to see about going into the land of Canaan. But as they went there, they had a problem. They saw the land, they saw the people, they saw the fortified cities, they saw how good the land was, but they also saw that this was going to be hard work. They saw that this was going to be tough. They were a crowd in the desert. Now, there were many fighting men amongst them. Believe me, when you go back and read how they left Egypt, they left arrayed as a army ready for battle, in the ranks of an army. And so that's how they left Egypt. They left boldly. They knew what it was like to fight their way or protect what they had. They were trained that way, even under the Egyptians. But now they had a problem, whether they're going to trust God or whether they're going to fear people. Now, it's a problem for us all the time, even today. We are that way in little things. trust God to be with you when you share the gospel of Jesus Christ. Oh, I'm afraid that maybe they'll be offended. All right, there we go. Are you going to trust God? Are you going to fear people? Are you willing to share the good news about Jesus and not worry about their offense because you're more worried about their soul? That's a key reason why we need to share the gospel of Christ. But at any rate, they come back with this report that the cities are large, the cities are fortified, the fruit is good. It's flowing with milk and honey. It's a rich land for them. But these are strong people. They're giants there. We're afraid of them. That's their problem. But they get that report, but then here's what Caleb said. Caleb was of the tribe of Judah. He was the representative that went there. And Caleb said this. Caleb quieted the people in the presence of Moses and said, let's go up now and take possession of the land because we can certainly conquer it. He's ready to go. Ready to take the land. Ready to fight for it. He's loaded for bear and he's going to take care of what's needed. He was ready. But the problem is all the rest of the scouts were scared. All the rest of them held back. All the rest of them were afraid of just exactly what might happen. And we read in Numbers 13:31, but the men who had gone up with him responded, we can't attack the people. They're stronger than we are. Well, now you start with a negative attitude. Anybody who knows anything about warfare means that an army can't go into a battle thinking they're going to lose if you expect them to come out strong on the other side. And so we had a problem here. We can't attack the people because they're stronger than we are. There were 10 of those 12 who felt this way. They gave a negative report to the Israelites about the land they had scouted. The land we passed through to explore is one that devours its inhabitants, and all the people we saw in it are men of great size. We even saw the Nephilim there, the descendants of Anak come from the Nephilim. To ourselves, we seem like grasshoppers. We must have seen the same to them. Doesn't sound like they're ready to go. It's a contrast from Caleb, isn't it? Caleb said, let's go. We can certainly knock these guys down. But the others said, no. They'll just squish us underfoot. We can't do it. And it said they gave the negative report to the Israelites, not just back to Moses and Aaron. And so they spread the idea that they just couldn't do this. Well, what happens then is that the people are in a complete panic. They hear this word. They talk among themselves. They talk about what reports came back. They completely ignore the fact this is a good land, a land flowing of milk and honey. It's all the things that God had promised them. But what happens? They hear this report, and in 14:1 it says the whole community broke into loud cries, and the people wept that night. Well, here they are. They've left Egypt. They've seen God's mighty hand at work. God has done amazing things for them. They spent a year and a half at Sinai. God has given his laws. He's written in the tablets of stone. He's even did that twice, made sure that the laws were inscribed on stone tablets. And as they brought that then to the people and taught the people, they were supposed to be ready to go into the land. The scouts went out, and so many brought back bad report that the people just couldn't face what was in front of them. They were in a panic. And so what we find is we have a new setting, but the same old complaint in Numbers 14, 2 and 3. All the Israelites complained about Moses and Aaron. And the whole community told them, if only we had died in the land of Egypt, or if only we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to die by the sword? Which, by the way, would have been quicker. Our wives and children will become plunder. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? Same setting, Your new setting, same complaint. Why did you bring us out here to die in the desert? It happened when they needed food, and God gave them the bread of angels to eat, the manna from heaven. And then they got sick of that, and they, well, that actually comes in part of the story that I'm not sharing today. At first, God provided them with quail and manna, so they had bread and meat. And then they were back to manna only when they left Sinai this second time, and they got kind of sick of that, and they complained, and God threw so many quail at them that it became loathsome to them, and even a plague and all this stuff. But that's not the story we're really telling today, because we're focusing on the Israelites moving toward the promised land and Moses' role in all of this. The same complaint as always. They complained about Moses and Aaron. The whole community told them, if only you hadn't taken us out of our nice, comfortable life as slaves of the Egyptians. Wherein, when they were there, their cries went up to heaven and God decided it was time to rescue them. They forgot that. Now they're complaining that they're out here heading for the promised land. And they can't face the fight. Wouldn't it be better for us to go back to Egypt? So they have a solution. Their solution in Numbers 14, 4 and 5. So they said to one another, let's appoint a leader and go back to Egypt. We'll make our own rulers here, our own leader to take us back, because we can't deal with these guys here. Their solution, change leaders. You'd think it was football or something. A losing team, just change coaches, right? Is that going to do the job? Well, not if the players aren't ready. Not if the players aren't ready. Well, what happened then is Moses and Aaron fell face down in front of the whole assembly of the Israelite community. They didn't stand and fight for themselves. They instead submitted themselves face down before the community. They were in a place where they could be walked on, literally, if the community decided to overrun them. And while they did that, we hear this. We have Joshua speaking up in Numbers 14, 6 to 9. Joshua, son of Nun, and Caleb, son of Jephunneh, who are among those who scouted out the land, tore their clothes and said to the entire Israelite community, the land we passed through and explored is an extremely good land. If the Lord is pleased with us, he'll bring us into this land, a land flowing with milk and honey, and give it to us. Only don't rebel against the Lord. Don't be afraid of the people of the land, for we will devour them. Their protection has been removed from them, and the Lord is with us. Don't be afraid of them. Now that's really quite a pep talk, condensed into a couple of verses. But he says, this is what God had promised. This is the land flowing with milk and honey. This is a good land. This is where God has prepared for us to go. He's provided it for us. When we get there, we will be blessed. And here's the key things in what they said. If the Lord is pleased with us, the Lord will bring us into this land. He will give it to us. Don't be afraid, or don't rebel against the Lord who wants to do this. Don't be afraid of the people of the land, because we're going to devour them. Their protection is removed from them. They have no covering from any gods they thought they had. We can charge right in. The Lord is with us. Yahweh, God of heaven and earth, is our God. Don't be afraid of people. Well, that should have been enough to kind of move them along. But here's the response of the people. They're so gracious to them. Numbers 14:10, while the whole community threatened to stone them. Boy, they really received that pep talk well. The whole community threatened to stone them. The glory of the Lord appeared to all the Israelites at the tent of the meeting. And now, as God speaks to Moses, this time it's God's turn to complain. in Numbers 14, 11, 12, the Lord said to Moses, how long will these people despise me? How long will they not trust in me despite all the signs I performed among them? I'll strike them with a plague and destroy them. Then I'll make you, Moses and Aaron, into a greater and mightier nation than they are. Well, that's quite a temptation, actually. Moses was a little bit tired of their complaining too, but then this was just at the beginning of the time they would spend in the wilderness. We'll talk about that in a little bit. And the Lord said, how long will these people despise me? I want to wipe them out, except you and Aaron. I'll make a new nation out of you. These guys have used up all of their extra credit. Well, Moses then intercedes with God. But I want you to listen to this, how Moses intercedes for God's honor, even while he's talking to God, not the people. And here's what he says. Numbers chapter 14, verses 13 to 16. But Moses replied to the Lord, the Egyptians will hear about it, for by your strength you brought up this people from them. They'll tell it to the inhabitants of this land. They have heard that you, Yahweh, are among these people. How you, Yahweh, are seen face to face. How your cloud stands over them, and how you go before them in a pillar of cloud by day and a pillar of fire by night. Oh, God, if you kill this people with a single blow, the nations that have heard of your fame will declare, well, since the Lord wasn't able to bring this people into the land he swore to give them, he slaughtered them in the wilderness. God, you don't want the nations talking about you like that. I know you're fed up with these people, but I know how people talk too. This face-to-face conversation that Moses has to God, you know, there's a passage later on, or let's see, that I read in preparation, where Aaron and Miriam had a little fight among themselves about why Moses got all the glory. You know, aren't we listening? Aren't we your prophets too? And Moses says, well, I speak to my prophets in visions, and I speak to my prophets in dreams. But with Moses, I speak to him face to face, friend to friend, mouth to mouth. And so Moses is allowed to have this push and pull with God that is kind of unique among all the prophets. Oh, David complains, and Jeremiah has his complaints, but with Moses, it's a conversation that's active when the glory of the Lord comes down. And so he is not afraid to remind the Lord how people talk. Now, God knows that, of course, but he also needed to know that Moses knew that. And so Moses offers another way. Moses says this in verses 17 to 19. So now, may my Lord's power be magnified just as you have spoken. The Lord is slow to anger and abounding in faithful love, forgiving iniquity and rebellion, but he will not leave the guilty unpunished, bringing the consequences of the father's iniquity on the children to the third and the fourth generation. Please pardon the iniquity of this people. In keeping with the greatness of your faithful love, just as you have forgiven them from Egypt until now. Well, Moses intercedes for God's honor, and then he uses an important attribute of God to claim what he sees as important for God to, or how God to act. Now, Moses is not directing God, by the way. God is always God. But they have this conversation in order that Moses would know that he is part of the communion of conversation between himself, between people and God at this point in time. This verse in Numbers 14:18, the Lord is slow to anger and abounding in faithful love, forgiving iniquity and rebellion. But he will not leave the guilty unpunished. That verse is repeated in the Psalms and in the words of David and in other places, but here is where it comes. Moses speaking it to Yahweh God during this conversation. Well, see, God forgives, but the consequences remain. Here's how the Lord responded. I pardon them as you've requested. Yet as I live, and as the whole earth is filled with the Lord's glory, none of the men who have seen my glory and the signs I performed in Egypt and in the wilderness and have tested me these 10 times and did not obey me, none of them will ever see the land I swore to give their ancestors. None of those who have despised me will see it. But since my servant Caleb has a different spirit and has remained loyal to me, I will bring him into the land where he has gone, and his descendants will inherit it. Well, there is the Lord's response. As Moses reminded God that he is a forgiving God because of his everlasting faithful love, Moses pleaded for them. He knew they were sinners. He asked for forgiveness, and the Lord pardoned them. As the priest, Moses stood in the middle between the people and God. However, here was the curse, the consequence. None of these people are ever going to see that promised land again. Well, the problem is, with complaints and consequences, there is always more to the issue. God has a punishment because he also has a complaint against the people. In Numbers 14:26-29, the Lord spoke to Moses and Aaron, how long must I endure this evil community that keeps complaining about me? I've heard the Israelites' complaints that they make against me. Tell them as I live, this is the Lord's declaration, I will do exactly as I heard you say. Your corpses will fall in this wilderness. All of you who are registered in the census, the entire number of you, 20 years or more, because you have complained about me. And he says, as he goes on, in verse 30-31, I swear that none of you will ever enter the land I promised to settle you in, except Caleb of Jephunneh and Joshua, son of Nun. I will bring your children, whom you said would become plunder, into the land you rejected, and they will enjoy it. Well, there's the 40 years. There's the sentence that's given. Instead of marching on in, going to the land that God has given, now you will have to endure 40 years in the wilderness. All of this generation must die. Now, I'm going to jump over to Deuteronomy chapter 1, because there Moses retells the Lord's purpose. Now, I want you to read all of chapter 1 of Deuteronomy and compare it to what is in Numbers chapter 13 and 14, and all of Numbers, actually, and especially chapter 20, which I'll get to in a moment. But I want to take these last verses as Moses retells the Lord's purpose in the book of Deuteronomy. Moses is older now, and things are a challenge as he's getting ready to leave the people. The people have been a challenge the whole way, but Moses is reminding them of who God is and what the promises are. Deuteronomy 1:30-33, the Lord your God who goes before you will fight for you, just as you saw him do for you in Egypt. And you saw in the wilderness how the Lord your God carried you as a man carried his son all along the way you traveled until you reached this place. But in spite of this, you did not trust the Lord your God who went before you on the journey to seek out a place for you to camp. He went in He went in the fire by night and the cloud by day to guide you on the road you were to travel. And when the Lord heard your words, he grew angry and swore an oath. None of these men in this evil generation will see the good land I swore to give your ancestors, except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh. He will see it, and I will give him to his descendants and his descendants the land on which he has set foot, because he remained loyal to the Lord. And then listen to this from Moses. Verse 37 of Deuteronomy 1. The Lord was angry with me also because of you, and said, you will not enter there either. Joshua, son of Nun, who attends you, will enter it. Encourage him, for he will enable Israel to inherit it. Your children, who you said would be plunder, your sons who don't yet know good from evil, will enter there. I will give them the land, and they will take possession of it. Now, I want us to say, to figure this one out. Just exactly what was it that happened at Meribah? Well, at Meribah, Israel returned to Kadesh after 37 years of wandering. The place is called Holy, the place of holiness. The Israelites have been a nation of nomad shepherds. As the old guard saw that Yahweh's miracles slowly died out over these years. And we have this in chapter 20 of Numbers. The entire Israelite company entered the wilderness of Zin in the first month of the 40th year, by the way, at this point. And they settled in Kadesh. Miriam died and was buried there. There was no water for the community, so they assembled against Moses and Aaron. Well, that's not new, is it? The place was now dry. It was almost time for the Israelites to move out. Miriam's death is one of the signs that the 40 years was up, for she was one of the older generations who would not see the land of promise. But unlike when they were at Kadesh before, the springs were now dry. And guess what? The Israelites complained again. There was no water for the community, so they assembled against Moses and Aaron. Well, the people quarreled with Moses and with Aaron. And they said, if only we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord. Why have you brought the Lord's assembly into the wilderness for us and our livestock to die here? Why have you led us from Egypt to bring us to this evil place? It's not a place of grain, of figs, of vines, and pomegranates. There's no water to drink. Well, again, same old thing. We should have died sooner. Moses and Aaron went to hear God. Numbers 20, verse 6. They went from the presence of the assembly to the doorway of the tent of the meeting. They fell face down, and the glory of the Lord appeared to them. And God gave Moses a solution. The Lord spoke to Moses, take the staff, assemble the community. You and your brother Aaron are to speak to the rock while they watch. It will yield its water. You will bring out water for them from the rock and provide drink for the community and their livestock. So Moses took the staff from the Lord's presence just as he had commanded them. The staff that Yahweh told Moses to take with him, by the way, was the same staff that God told him to throw down at the burning bush that became a snake to prove that God was in control. The same one that was used in front of Pharaoh, which turned into a snake and devoured the snakes from the magicians of Egypt. The same staff that Moses held at the dividing of the Red Sea. It was the same staff that later had Aaron's name carved on it and budded and bloomed and bore almonds overnight when it was set before the Ark of the Lord's Covenant with the staffs of the other tribes of Israel to prove God had chosen Moses and Aaron as spokesmen. God told Moses to take the staff to get the people together. Take them to the rock there at the oasis of Kadesh where the springs must have dried up. And then Moses and Aaron were to speak to the rock in the sight of the people so the water would flow. And Moses took the staff and went to do as God said. But something must have happened on the way to gather the people there because things didn't go exactly the way that God had commanded. Moses and Aaron come to the rock. And they summoned the assembly there as God had told them. I don't know how many days it took for the people to get there or what was up, but the grumbling was still there. And by this time, Moses had rather raw nerves, I think. In verse 10 of Numbers 20, Moses and Aaron summoned the assembly in front of the rock, and Moses said to them, "Listen, you rebels, must we bring water out of this rock for you?" Then Moses raised his hand and struck the rock twice with his staff, so that abundant water gushed out, and the community and their livestock drank. Well, it sounds okay to start. Moses and Aaron got the people together at the rock. But then Moses turns on the people just like they had turned on him so many times. And like the complaint that Moses had made to God in earlier chapters, Moses felt that he had carried Israel on his own back through all the ups and downs of the past 40 years. He was tired, and it wouldn't have taken much to get him really angry, and something must have irritated his tired nerves as the nomads were called to settle and prepare for the battle and march into the land of Canaan. "Listen, you rebels." Okay, that's not really speaking to the people of Israel very nicely. Not so much the people of Israel as a pack of renegades. "Must we bring water out of this rock for you?" Uh-oh. Moses, wait a minute. Who does the water giving? God had told them to speak to the rock in the presence of the Israelites. Instead, like he was working magic instead of proving Yahweh God's work for his people, Moses hit the rock. You remember it says he hit it twice? He hit the rock. Nothing. I have no idea what he might have muttered under his breath at this point. But then he hit the rock a second time, and God made the water flow in great abundance. But then Yahweh chastises his prophet and his priest. This is not how it's supposed to go. Numbers 20, 12 to 13. "But the Lord said to Moses and Aaron, 'Because you did not trust me to demonstrate my holiness in the sight of the Israelites, you will not bring this assembly into the land I've given them. These are the waters of Meribah where the Israelites quarreled with the Lord.'" And he demonstrated his holiness to them. So this is the story as it's recorded in the timeline of events in Numbers. And it reads a little differently than how the event was remembered by Moses when he shared the summary of the law in Deuteronomy. He said, "The Lord was angry with me also because of you." Moses blamed the Israelites for his behaviors and said, "You will not enter there either. Because of you," Moses says, "I don't get to go to the promised land." What went wrong at the rock? Well, what went wrong at the rock is what goes wrong with our lives all the time. God carries us along. God feeds us what we need. He shows us where to go. He provides things. He proves his power and his glory. If only we will look back, not so far as the land of slavery of sin, but along the way where God has led us, where God has empowered us, where God has brought us, where God is still with us, and believe that God is going to be with us in the future. What happened with Moses at the rock happens with us. We start to decide that it's because of us that all this good happened. Because of us, we've carried ourselves all this way. Not so much because of God's work, but because of us. See, Moses slipped into that place, and it led to his disaster. He would not see the promised land except from afar. After all of these years, all of these years, we have to pay attention to what went wrong at the rock, and even how it's remembered by Moses in Deuteronomy. Because we have to remember to be honest with ourselves and honest with God so that in the future we can look to God for all those things we need. I know we get tired. I know we get worn out. I know that life is hard. I know that God has also been with us every step of the way. And he's going to be with you in your today. He's going to be with you in your tomorrow, and he's going to be the God who provides because of his everlasting love. He will be the God who forgives because of his everlasting love. He He will be the God who adores because of his everlasting love. So rest in that love today. Let's pray together. Father, thank you that you are good. Thank you that you are love. Thank you that you are faithful. And Lord, forgive us our unfaithfulness. Forgive us those times where we feel like it's all up to us. Forgive us those times where we don't let you have the control that you desire in our lives. And Lord, teach us to give you the glory always. Help us to be your people always. We thank you in the name of Jesus Christ, the reason why we can say we are forgiven as Lord and Savior.